In memory of Jelly Bean, Jelly Bean's mum is a listener and patron of Time to Talk TFMR.
This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley, and in this episode, we're talking with Rasmus. He and his wife Buff live in Portugal and run an eco-retreat together. Their son Forrest died last year. We don't often hear from dads in the TFMR community or in the baby loss community as a whole. So I want to thank Rasmus for joining us today. It's really great to have you here, Rasmus. And I know you're a little bit nervous, but it's going to be okay. And I think it's a bit nerve-wracking because we don't hear from dads very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
I tend to agree. You're not asked a lot about your personal feelings. You're asked a lot about how your wife got through it because it's her body and the medical intervention was her. And the loss is more directly attached to her body. And as a man, you're more of a spectator and you're a support pillar for your wife. But not a lot of reading material or testimonies to get as a man as you go through a situation like this.
Mm. No, you're right. And I think that's why it's great that you're here talking about this, because I'm sure that other men, other dads will really appreciate it. So maybe you could take us back to when you found out that Forrest, there was a problem. It wasn't going according to plan, and where you were at in that.
We were at the, I don't know if it's a classical stage, but we had the 12, 13 week scan. Everything looked perfect. And we were just waiting for the gender scan, as we called it, which is a mistake. It's an anomaly scan. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I didn't even attend because of COVID. So she went alone with her parents, and all we thought we were going to know that day was gender. It didn't even cross our minds.
Okay.
And she called me. I'm getting emotional already.
It's okay.
She called me, and I could just, from the second she started talking, something was horribly wrong. And she couldn't really put into words during that phone call what it was, other than now she had to come home and we had to talk about it, but something was wrong.
Yeah.
Completely wrong. And she came back and brought the documents and the papers and the report from the scan, and we were trying to decipher together what this meant, how severe it was, and what was going to happen next. And Buff, my wife's reaction was to wait until the follow-up scans, the follow-up schedules with the doctors, and me as a very literate person could read from the paper that this was not good. So I realized it right then that this was, we had some very rough months ahead of us, where Buff more leaned into the hope that it might have been a false positive, or the scan was just not showing the right image.
Mm-hmm.
So already at this point, I was, I didn't want to crush her hope, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's hard to say this without sounding blunt, but trying to allow her reality to exist together with my whole world crashing, because at this point, I probably already knew that we were going to lose him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not lose him, but having a huge decision if a child with this severe AMC, and I guess this term is known on the podcast, what AMC means and the umbrella term that it covers.
Do you want to say what that is? Because people might not know what that is.
I can't even remember the actual words behind it, but it's an umbrella term that covers a wide range of, what's the right word, where the fetus doesn't...
sort of defects.
Yeah, exactly. But a very wide range. So okay. It's not like, yeah, so it could be anything really. But with our baby, his hands were did not form properly. His whole torso was almost like wrongly attached to his body, so his legs almost pointed in the wrong direction.
Okay.
Which is like, if both your hands and your legs are never going to function, what sort of life are you looking forward to, even if you can survive, you know?
So what I'm hearing in that, because you were looking at, and I know from talking to Buff as well, that this was a somewhat gray diagnosis, in that there wasn't a sort of clear, a very clear, okay, your baby, you know, doesn't have kidneys, or your baby's brain has not developed in a certain way. So there was some ambiguity, there was some unknowns here. And you were looking at this document. And did you have a chance to speak to the medical professionals yourself about this? Or were you purely just reading what was there?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I have a problem with the Portuguese system, but I was hardly even had eye contact with anyone.
Okay.
It was all focus on Elizabeth. I was just there.
Okay, so you were a sort of add-on appendage to her in a way.
Yeah, and all signatures and all papers that needed to be, like, it was Buff. So I was just there in the room.
Yeah. Can you just, because I can hear it in your voice, but just can you say how that felt to just be not acknowledged in this process, what that was for you?
I have understanding as well as it being frustrating, because we haven't even started talking about the actual part of losing him and what that did to my partner's body. And so it's like a mix of wanting to support my wife the best way I can, understanding that she is physically connected to Forrest at this point in a way I'm not. And understanding why the medical staff puts their focus on her. I have understanding for it, but for me personally, well, you don't want to take up a lot of space as it happens. It's all about my wife and my son, not so much about me. You have to kind of step back. But yeah, you're not an important. You're not relevant.
You're not the focus. Yeah, you're not the focus. They're going, okay, there's a baby who's very poorly and there's a woman who's carrying him. And we as the medical professionals, that's where our focus of care is going to go. They're not thinking about the emotional and mental impact on those around her. They may not be thinking too much, but maybe a bit about the emotional impact on her, but it's a very focused on the sort of doing, what do we need to do here? Mm-hmm. And I think when you were describing before a few minutes ago about how you took this report and you understood what it meant before Buff did, really. And, you know, she was clinging onto this hope. And so you were having to sort of imagine you walking this tightrope between trying to support her and look after her and knowing the crushing reality before her.
Or at least accepted what the medical judgment was on it. And I remember we had, I wouldn't call it a fight, because we were both just so hurt and destroyed. It was more like a clash. And one night before we had to go back to the hospital to have a follow-up, where I got desperate in my reality getting acknowledged as well. So having to admit to her that I can't pretend like everything is fine. I can't pretend like we're going back to the hospital tomorrow or in 2 days and they will tell us everything is fine. I know it's not. And so I was already destroyed at this point, where she was still hoping that the news could reverse and that it wasn't real, but it was real.
Yeah.
Very real.
Yeah. And I mean, I can imagine potentially her anger in that, of you sort of confronting her with the way that you were viewing things and how that could, you know, what we're talking about here is where the ruptures can start happening within the relationship around this.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. How difficult it is for couples.
Also, because my acknowledgement of the severity of it was kind of like the the negative value. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, her keeping hope is, in a Americanized way, how you should be thinking. There's always hope. It will sort out when one door closes, another one opens. Where all I could bring to the table at that point was that I was devastated because I knew something was deeply wrong with my son.
Yeah.
And yes, anger was one of her reactions, but it was also like, I remember her saying, why would you do that to me? Where all I could say is that I'm just saying how I feel as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing anything to you. I'm saying how I interpret and analyze all this information we've gotten in the last few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the most traumatic things that a couple can go through. And I think it's so important what we're hearing from you right now is what that impact has been on you. The responsibility that was given to you, you know, kind of handed to you, and how difficult that piece is to be the sort of, you know, almost the kind of reality person, you know, the sort of, you know, this is what's really happening here. Even though, you know, Buff didn't want to hear it.
I think a huge weight falls on you because, again, I don't want to use anemic terms like victim, but in a medical sense, Buff was the victim and I was the support. That was my role. The second this happened, I was expected to be a rock that she could lean on. And she was offered a psychologist, and I could see the empathy and the humanity in the nurses that we interacted with, but the eye contact was always with her, never with me. So you're also forced in as a man into that role of just neglecting yourself for a while, hopefully only to help your partner through it. And then it's done and you lose your baby. And then I guess a new set of realities hit you. And then you have to start processing. I postponed my processing of all this until very late in the process just to make sure we were eating and our house was working. And, you know.
Yep. I can relate to that a lot with my husband. He had to step into the practical. And Benjamin, our son, living son, he was 2.5 at the time. So, you know, there was things that just had to be done, and he stepped in and did those things. And I think in some ways it gave him a role and it was helpful, but like you say, it delayed his grief that had to come at some point, and it did. And I think, you know, you say that Buff had this psychological support, and like you said, you know, she's the one who's physically going through this. However, there's a part in there that I kind of go, yeah, and if they can offer that support to the dad, the partner as well, with the understanding that if they are shoring up the partner, the dad, I mean, that's the person that's going to go away with the mother in the long term and to support. But if they don't have that backup, then there could be a big problem down the road. It feels quite short-sighted,
and the issue is even bigger. It's also about like male behavior and how males are unable to support each other emotionally, and what's absolutely taboo to talk about. And you don't, as a man, call your friend to say, I feel like shit, I'm utterly depressed, I'm in the darkest hole you can imagine. It's a bigger cultural thing, I think.
Yeah.
But like, interesting as well, when I talk to family members and even my own sister, the questioning is not about how I am doing. It's about how Buff is doing. And I'm not criticizing that. I'm just kind of saying it as an observation.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to solve it.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that by having these honest conversations, it's hopefully going to start people thinking or questioning these things. Right, let's get back to Forrest and him in this, and you guys going on to this appointment, and, you know, the reality of, okay, we're going to have to make this decision.
we went back for a follow-up scan, mostly to confirm what we'd seen on the first one was true. And there was no question that he was severely, and it's a weird word to use about a human being, but misshapen, which is what he was. Meaning he would have handicap on both hands. He would have handicaps on his legs. His torso was not working, as I mentioned before. And that could also affect how his organs, if there was enough room for his organs and how his body would function. And in that meeting, I think I was the direct one and asked the doctor if there was any chance this child could be born without severe disabilities, severe handicaps that would affect their entire life quality. And she looked me straight into the eyes and said there was no chance. Like he would have a extremely low quality of life, and that they could offer to try to give him surgeries, but by the looks of it, they didn't even think he would survive full term. So
do you want to just say how that felt when you heard that? Because what did that do to you as a dad, as Forrest's dad?
I think I was already ready to hear it. So as validation is not the right word. All words seem strange to use in this context, but just hearing that what I was getting from the documents and from the previous scans, that was reality.
So it was a way of you going, okay, what I've read from these papers, I've understood it correctly. The doctors confirmed that.
And then already, because I'm the kind of guy, if I'm in front of a problem like that, I research like mad. So what I have been doing in the week leading up to the second scan was just to read everything I could about it. So my head started going towards the absolute horrible next few months we were going to have, and especially the moment where we had to go in and lose him. And that was, as I remember, and Buff might say that my timeline is wrong, my time has been relative ever since we lost him, honestly, but I felt like there was a long time between this realization where the doctor confirmed that he would never be a healthy boy. I remember it as being 3 weeks, maybe it was only 2 weeks, but for me that was like super slow motion watching a train coming right at you. Whereas for Buff, it was her chance of saying goodbye to him while he was still alive. So there was a complete contrast between how me and Buff went through those 3 weeks.
So I'm hearing for you, it was a sort of drawn out agony.
Complete, the worst I've ever, and I've had a pretty dramatic life, but I can't even, the worst.
Yeah.
Night terrors and not sleeping, and because you know what's coming.
And you're helpless.
Completely helpless. And how do you get ready for such a thing? Such a brutal, brutal thing, because it was brutal, extremely brutal. And you have, I wouldn't say I'm a super spiritual guy, but I had some spirituality in me before, but then all of a sudden, like this magic we like to shroud humanity in, it just became very like boiled down to nature and life and death, and that something could be shaped and wrong, so it was not viable. And all, like, you can rationally understand these things, but when it happens to you and your own child, it's like my whole brain got rewired, and I'm still suffering from this.
Yeah. This was only a year ago. I'd like to sort of say as well that Forrest, his anniversary was very recently as well.
Yes, it was. And my wife is now only 6 weeks away from having a baby daughter. So it's been it's been absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to tell us a little bit about when Forrest was born, what that was like?
I think I need to back up a bit to when Forrest died. And this is something I thought a lot about, if I wanted to be transparent on it or not, because it's just so grim and brutal. But I think in case other people go through it, it's nice to hear that someone else also did.
Okay.
Because we had a clear choice between how we wanted Forrest's last moments to be. And either you give birth to him when he's premature, and then he will die under some circumstance after X amount of minutes, hours, even a week, maybe even a month, which we were told were not probable. It was more minutes, maybe tops an hour. Or you euthanize him. And just saying the word euthanize in the same sentence as your own baby is absolutely mind-blowing.
It's not something we should have to say as parents, is it? It just shouldn't happen.
It's just...
nobody should have to go through that.
So brutal. So brutal. And when I have night terrors now and I have PTSD after it happened, it's back in that room where we euthanized him. That was by far the... but I think I can talk about it. Maybe not.
Why have you chosen that word to describe it? Because it's not the word that they would have used with you in the hospital.
They would call it a termination, but
yes,
that sounds even worse.
Yeah,
I think. Because if you talk about a severely sick person that's in suffering, that you want to help them leave this earth, it would be euthanizing them. And that's also the discussion to legalize euthanasia. So there is no good word about it. If you read religious blogs, they would say you're killing your baby. Mm. And I don't know if that sounds any better. But it was a crazy, crazy, crazy experience with the most experienced doctor they had that's done this before, because it's such a crazy operation. And I remember that they also had medical students in the room, because it's relatively rare that they give this injection. And I remember that it was just like a grim energy in the room from everyone. No one really wanted to be in the room, because it was just awful for everyone involved, including the medical students that was trying to like vanish into the wallpaper, but still had to watch it to see how it was done. And I remember the first, as we were supposed to start the procedure, they asked if Buff was ready, and she wasn't ready. She started crying. And again, I also felt like falling apart, but I had to somehow calm her down. So they all left the room, and we were sure about our decision. It was not really like an ethical problem at that point. It was just that it was about to happen. We were about to watch him die. And then they came back into the room after a while, and she closed her eyes, and I think meditated herself out of the room, because it's almost as if she disappeared. And they put the needle in her, and Forrest moved. So they had to take the needle out and try again. And he moved one more time. He almost like rolled away from it. And then the third or the fourth time, I can't remember exactly, they found the spot they needed, and then they had to pump in this liquid to stop his heart. And the nurse was so nervous that the needle she was using, the plunger, broke. So this liquid was squirting everywhere. It was squirted on her, squirted on me, and they had to refill it. And it happened twice more. And she was getting frustrated, and the doctor was getting frustrated, and his heart was still going on the monitor. So, and then all of a sudden it stopped. And the doctor had a sigh of relief and said, "It's done. He's not here anymore." And then there was not relief, but there was like a weird silence from all of us, and the medical students left the room, and the doctors left the room, except the one guy that did the procedure stayed with us, and he was shook as well, I could tell.
Sounds like it was quite a, sounding very traumatic.
Extremely traumatic.
Very traumatic. You know, not only are you having to, you've made this decision, this is how you wish this to go. Again, language, like you don't wish this to go, right? But these are your two options. You've chosen that option, feeling like that is the least shit option out of the two. And then it goes it this way. And it's this adding more trauma to an already traumatic experience of having it prolonged like this. You're not the first one to have described, you know, how this can go. Yeah, it adds to the layer of the things that you have to hold and you have to carry and you remember that you have to work through. Yeah, it's the tapestry of the trauma and the grief in this.
It's what wakes me up at night covered in sweat still. Not so much the rest of it, because I can find some beauty in when I actually got to meet him.
Yeah.
I can't find any beauty in the part
it's brutal.
Where he died.
Yeah. To use your word, it is a brutal thing. I think I was just thinking, you know, for Forrest, for him, it probably was, you know, I like to think that it didn't impact in that way. I think it's the us who are left here, you know, in the room witnessing it, you as his parents.
I think our main reasoning behind this is if he had the choice to be pulled into reality, even for 2 hours, to then slowly suffocate.
Yeah.
Or he could die in the womb where he felt completely safe.
Yeah.
Where he was still with his mother. To us, it would be selfish not to euthanize him. And I will never judge anyone for making other decisions. But for us personally, it was pointless to pull him into this world for him to then die slowly.
Yeah.
Instead of...
It's kinder. It felt kinder. Yeah. And I can really resonate with that. That was part of our reasoning with Luna. I didn't, because of my gestation, I wasn't offered the injection. There's some debate around that, around should that be offered at earlier gestations? Because there was a chance that Luna could have been born with signs of life, and then effectively she would have suffocated because she was so small, her lungs weren't able to function. But that was the whole point of why we chose to terminate at the time that we did, because we also had a gray diagnosis. This was also a sort of, you could miscarry, you could go to term. Mm. If she's born living, then she could live for a few hours, days, probably not longer than days, but we don't know. You know, it was a very unknown thing. And so part of our reasoning was I just couldn't stand the idea of her suffocating to death. It just, yeah. And again, like you, I don't judge people making that decision. It's a very personal one. And my decisions around that were based on my history and my past. Of course, everybody's is, right? So, yeah, I'm really hearing the trauma in what you're recounting there for you.
It's a completely life-changing thing to happen to you. Then the follow-up is to actually meet him, you know? So it's not done there. The journey has just begun.
Yeah.
So we were right after we knew he was dead now, she went to the maternity ward to actually deliver him. Mm. And they pumped her full of drugs. It was awful because her body was not ready to let go of him.
Mm.
Of course it wasn't. It was not supposed to happen yet. So they gave her the inducing drugs, and for the next 18 hours, I just watched her go through this. I don't even know how to, just absolutely nuts to see your partner going through something. So again, I want to use the word brutal, but it wasn't really, because it was so slow. Mm. And she was so graceful, and she was so strong, and she was so determined to make it something beautiful. And I want to be perfectly honest, for me personally, it was hard to find beauty in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't want it to. there was some beauty because Buff had arranged for our friends to light a candle, and they sent that to us in respect for Forrest and in respect for what we're going through. But ultimately, I knew the outcome of this was that we lost our son and we were going to not meet him, to see him.
Yeah.
And I just, there's no way to brace yourself for that.
Yeah.
And again, because you're just watching your partner go through all the physicality of it and you're completely disconnected from it, just watching it happen very, very, very slowly. And it was clear that I don't think Buff actively didn't want to give birth to him, but her body was not ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Her somatic sense hadn't caught up with the physical reality or the cognitive reality.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I, again, I'm hearing from you this sort of, you're kind of very much in the reality of what is happening and about to happen. And I'm wondering also, you're sort of having this projection of what's to come. You know, this is not, you did not set out, this is not how it's meant to be. You set out to have children, have Forrest alive, and that's not what's happening now. And the enormity of that is very much, you're very aware of that in this.
And that I'm about to see my dead son.
Yeah.
And even more, I know it's very blunt, but do I want to watch my dead son come out of my partner? Is that, because we know we want to have kids. This is a love child. Everything was planned. Like you can then choose to increase your trauma by also connecting her with seeing your dead son, or do you want to look away as it happens? Do you want to leave the room as it happens and then be introduced to him afterwards? I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. Because like you say, you've expected birth to be your living child, and that's what you're going to receive. What is it going to do to my brain and my trauma to see my dead son?
Yeah.
Coming. So 5 minutes before she was about to give birth, they burst, so the water broke, and then everything happened extremely quickly, like within 15 minutes. And I left the room for those 15 minutes because I completely broke down, because it was the first time I had a physical reaction to it. I tried to be strong, and then at that moment, now it's happening, everything dawned on me and became extremely real, and I just fell apart. So I sat right outside the room. I could hear everything on a chair, and I could see that the nurses were slightly annoyed with me because I was destroying the peace of the maternity ward. And what would other people think if this huge Danish man was sitting there crying? But it only lasted, like I say, 15 minutes. And then the nurse and the nurse's helper came out and said that I should come inside. And that's the first like actual empathy and kindness I got was from them. I could see they were also hurting on my behalf. And they took me in and put my hand in Forrest. And I think that you just really realized how real it all was, because when you read about normal pregnancies, the dad doesn't really understand it until he's standing there with his baby in his hands. And this is the same, but just with so many variables, because he was dead.
Yeah, not the way it was meant to be.
No, completely wrong. But actually, that's the only part of it now I look back on as something beautiful, because then we spent a few hours with him and we bathed him and we did like prints of his feet to have something. And we had to say goodbye to him. We had already decided to donate him to science. So his next step was an autopsy to try to figure out if there's something genetical they could have done. And they came into the room and wrapped him up and took him away. And then there was just a giant blank space. Something disappeared that we never had, like a hollow space in both of us. And I think that's when we realized that that was not even close to the end of the journey either. That's when the real processing starts.
That's when it all begins, yeah. I mean, I'm feeling very moved by listening to you. I just want to acknowledge that. Yeah, I'm just, I think it's you speaking about him being wrapped up and taken away and the hollowness felt by both of you at that point. I can really resonate with that. It's not the way it was meant to be. He was meant to be born at the right time and alive and able to come home with you. And
also just realize, just watching this and seeing and touching and holding your dead baby, that this is going to change who you are forever. Yeah. And you feel like, who am I going to be after this?
Yeah.
How am I ever going to feel normal or complete or happy or seeing the beauty and magic of the world and life after this?
Can I live after this? It really is. It takes you to the real existential. What is the point of anything if this is what happens?
Mm.
What is the point of anything? That I went to that place, and it's not a great place to be in. It's very horrible. Very frightening.
Absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And I think because the birth had been so long and we run a farm, after that she was exhausted and just needed to sleep, and I needed to go back and feed our animals and make sure everything was okay back home. And I remember getting back in the car and just sitting there for 5 seconds and then just completely dissolving because I had no one to be strong for, so I could just,
you could let go,
just feel it.
Mm. Yeah.
But I still have to push it away because it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
I have to push it away a bit.
I want to find out from you about, because I can hear that you're still, this is, and you will be for the rest of your life, you'll be working through this. It changes as life goes on. And you have to revisit things. But I want to hear how you have got yourself to this point where you are now. Because, you know, you've mentioned PTSD, you've mentioned how people, your family, friends, don't ask you how you are in this. So how have you managed?
I think, don't get me wrong, I had a period after we were both in overwhelming, deep, dark grief where I wasn't handling it correctly or in a good way. And sometimes by drinking too much wine to actually be able to sleep. And she was also going through it in an introverted way, because it can be hard to unify in that grief, because you keep oscillating between different emotions. And so we had a period of just trying to find each other as partners again after this trauma we'd been through. I think we are really good at communicating throughout all of it and all the things we've been together. So somehow, even though we could be in different directions, so one could be hopeful one day where the other one was super sad, we tried to give each other as much space as possible to grief. And grief can take many shapes and sizes, and there's no right or wrong way to to deal with it. But I think the big thing that happened for us to, like you say, it's not moving on. No. It is moving on, but it's not.
Not in the sense of how people throw that out. Oh, yeah. You know, you got to move on. It's not in that way.
All healed up. I'm fine now.
Yeah. No, but feel better now.
When we found out she was pregnant, honestly, was the next like big step towards the future. Mm. And it was all that was not planned. It's still a love child, but not planned. She was going to have a COVID test made, and they said, "Are you 100% sure you're not pregnant?" I said, "Well, I'm not 100% sure I'm not pregnant, but I doubt it." And then she had a blood test, and she was. Mm. And I think that was like a wake up call. Now, okay, now we have to function in reality again, because now a new person is actually coming,
and they need us.
And they need us.
Yeah.
And that has Rosa, our daughter, it's going to come soon, has moved us forward. But it was a long journey getting here. And like you say, it's only a year ago. It feels like a lot more than a year this year. Mm. Yeah, it does.
I wanted to, because you're in Portugal and you're both not originally from Portugal. So how is that impacted for, you know, getting support for you? You know, you're not having family close by, presumably. I don't know what your friendship circle is like. What?
There's, in a medical sense, in the established system here, there is none, zero, no help. Mm. It just doesn't exist. Amongst friends, again, that's a male culture thing that, yes, I have some of my male friends where I've talked about it, but it's brief, and then you kind of snake your way out of it again, because it's just so dark that you almost don't even want to put it on anyone either.
Yeah.
Like, you can see they're having a good day, and you know, if I want to talk about this, I'm going to affect them so deeply. Do I even want to put that weight on them? Mm. So I've gone through it mainly alone. Mm. And with my partner, of course, with Buff, but it's still a journey I'm going through mainly alone.
Yeah. And I can hear there's this real wanting to step forward to sort of, it's amazing, isn't it, what human beings can be put through and yet still manage to put a foot forward to survive. So I'm kind of hearing this last year has been about survival and then finding out that Buff was pregnant again.
I think, like you say, in some ways, because Buff was so broken after we were both broken, but I still managed to step into the role of then, all right, I'll keep everything going. I'll make sure we have healthy food to eat every day and so forth. It was probably also good for me that I had her to support. But at some point it catches up with you, and you also need to be allowed to be broken. Mm. So it was sometimes a challenge that to be in sync with your partner. So on days where you're optimistic, you allow each other to be optimistic. But if you're optimistic and the other one is in the darkest of darkest holes, it's really hard to go and say, something
I'm struggling.
I'm struggling. Yeah. Or this is something I'm excited about, but that person can only cry at that moment. So it's all about trying to find that some motivation you can agree on again, but it's very complicated.
So hard. I mean, it's just what you're talking about. I was talking about it last week with somebody about, you know, how Charlie and I, my husband and I, you know, this journey that we've been on, it's been the hardest part for us as a couple has been trying to negotiate what you're describing, that we are not on the same page.
Exactly.
And that is really difficult. And it can lead to a lot of misunderstandings if you're not talking about it. But it's so hard to hold that when you're not on the same page with things. Yeah. And as you say, it's the communication in that, being able to talk about it as best you can to help mitigate any of those misunderstandings. Because I mean, that's the tragedy, you know, there's already a tragedy being dealt with here, to then have the couple fall apart as a couple, you know, as that relationship, it's just heartbreaking. But I also know how complicated it is. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get up one Sunday afternoon and something has happened. Something has shifted.
Yeah.
In both of
yes.
us.
Yeah.
In sync. So it's the biggest cliche, but sometimes grief just needs time as well. And you just like, allow it to be all consuming and dark for a while, because this too shall pass, or there's so many cliches.
Everything changes. I think that's the, yeah. that's the point, is like it all changes. And I think a lot of this is in the lesson of, we don't have any control or say over it.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely hitting the nail on the head. That's what we've learned from this. We have the illusion of control, trying to have control. We have nothing, no control.
Yeah. And that is, it's a major head fuck. And I'm still learning that. I'm still kind of trying to be with that. The fact that I can embrace it, or kind of lean into it, just, you know, surrender, actually. Mm. Surrender has been a big word for me in my process here. And it's hard. It's hard to surrender. Everything in you is trying to fight, mm-hmm. you know, fight for this baby. I mean, that's what Buff was doing, you know, as soon as she found out the bad news, was, I'm going to fight for this baby. You know, you're fighting for the relationship. You're fighting to keep the farm going. It's, everything is about sort of that side of keep going. And then there's this part that goes, you just have to surrender and let it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I wanted to just, you know, because it sounds like there wasn't much support for you. What ended up happening is you had to sort of pull on your own resources. You had to use a bit of distraction technique, as in, life has to keep moving. I have to make sure there's food on the table. There's animals to look after. And then when you could go and you could be by yourself and you could let it out, then you let it out. And apart from that, is that right? Has that been kind of your outlet? That's been your way of processing this.
And Buff has helped me immensely. Like, yeah. She is such a strong human being. And she also had plenty of energy to help me. And I've been as honest as I felt I could with her. And the longer we get from the day he died, the less sensitivity there is around me just being completely bluntly honest, because I'm never trying to, you know, negate her feelings or challenge her worldview. But sometimes I also just need to be completely honest about how I went through it. And it is different from hers.
Yeah.
But it's not less valid, you know? And I think now, full circle to expecting our daughter to come soon, we've never been stronger than this. But we've also been both far apart and close together and in dark spaces. But now, full circle, she has been my biggest support in all of this, because our farm and this little retreat we're building here is it's with her. She's my partner in all of it. So biggest advice is to just keep communicating with your partner, even when it seems completely impossible. Don't forget yourself, even though it's, as a man, you're told many times, and I was told many times in the hospital, almost like tauntingly from the doctors, men think they're so strong. Look, females are the one that's strong, as if I was on some high horse they needed to knock me down from, which I wasn't. I was super vulnerable as well in that situation. So my advice would be to don't become this unwavering pillar of support if you can't. Like, you're also allowed to cry, and you're also allowed to lose your mind for one night where you just don't have the ability to be strong anymore. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing you do by pretending like you're invulnerable is just to push your grief ahead of you. It is going to hit you at some point.
Yeah. And it's what it's going to take with it at the same time, whether that's, you know, your relationship, whether that's your own self, you know, like what you're destroying in yourself. Eventually it catches up.
There's no running away from it. you have to feel all the horrible things you might want to escape from. But I think you need to push past that and then see who you are on the other side. But you can't pretend like it didn't happen or just bury it in yourself. It's really bad for your whole body and your brain and your nervous system, because then it's going to pop up in your dreams, or it's going to destroy your sleep. Or I think a lot of men have this ability to compartmentalize and put it in a box and pretend like it's not there, but it won't work in the long run. You need to, when it washes over you, it washes over you.
Yeah. You start talking about the sort of piece of advice that you would give other dads, you know, to keep on communicating with your partner, to feel what you need to feel, that you have a right to feel those things. But I'm wondering, you know, for anybody who's listening as a support person, so whether that's another family member or a friend to a dad, to a father, what they could offer, what should they be doing?
Don't try to find a situation as a support person. Find a situation in your life that matches with it. The person in grief doesn't need you to have a matching experience. And possibly by trying to like match your experience with the person in grief, you might push them away a bit. So instead, just ask completely openly how they're doing. And you don't need to understand, but they do need to just talk about it. Because most of the support I've received will start with an anecdote from their life saying, I completely understand what you're going through. I don't need you to understand what I'm going through, but I need you to listen. It's just a pattern that I've gotten. And second, don't be afraid of that person opening up completely, even if it sounds so dark that it's hard to handle. It's hard to put it into words.
No, I think I'm hearing what you're saying. It's this, I think what you're saying is, first of all, you know, you can't say, I know exactly how you're feeling because of X, because you can't know how somebody's feeling. Mm-hmm. Even two people who've been through a TFMR, they can have a better understanding, but I still can't completely understand. You know, I can use my empathy to get me pretty well there, but maybe not all of it. So it's not a helpful sentence at all. Have you been through it? No. So then therefore you can't know.
Exactly.
And then, you know, being able to sit with the vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's an extremely powerful gift that a person can give. To be able to sit with another person's vulnerability and not feel like they have to rush in and fix it. They
exactly.
have to rush in and make it better. Because again, they can't. So the gift is allowing somebody to feel their vulnerability.
And like you say, that the conclusion to having a conversation like that with a person in grief is not to be fixed or having a solution or this is what you should
there
do.
There is no solution. You cannot fix this.
Exactly.
Your baby has died. It can't be fixed.
And that's okay.
And it's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still here. Mm-hmm. You're still here moving forward.
A second piece of advice would be to understand that a person that went through something so traumatic and so brutal is not the person that's going to call you to say, look, I'm 3 glasses of red wine down. I really need to talk. So maybe you need to be not intrusive, but you could not insisting, what's the right word for this? You can offer yourself actively instead of expecting the person in grief to be the one to reach out, especially if it's a man. Chances are that man probably won't.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point.
Women are much, much, much better at seeking a support system than men is.
I agree. How are you honoring Forrest now? How are you remembering him? How does he come with you?
Well, he's in my heart every single day. There's not a day go by where we don't think about it. But we're also dedicating one of our 2 cabins to him. And we've dedicated a whole part of our little forest to him. And we're going to plant a tree that gets very, very old in his name as well. but all the physical symbolism is not the strongest for me. For me, it's just the memory of my son, and that will always be with me. Mm. I'm just, what a shame I didn't get to know him. Mm. But he's with us in everything we do. Every time we think about Rosa, we also think about Forrest. It's all connected now.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Rasmus. It's been really, really wonderful listening to you and speaking with you. Really appreciate it.
You too, Haley. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. In our next episode, we're actually going to be hearing from Buff, Rasmus's wife. So don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, as this ensures you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released, and you can find us in most podcasting platforms. Get in touch. We love hearing from you. Find us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. That's it for this time. Thank you so much, and please take gentle care of yourselves.